Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country, the place for American patriots to come together as one united people, one nation under God. Today is Tuesday, May 14th, 2013, and my name is Sally Baptist. Thank you for tuning in tonight. Tonight we have our weekly American Freedom Watch radio show. And Karen Schoen is busy doing other things tonight, but John Estabrook will be our host tonight. And before we get into the show, I've got just two things I got to mention. First off, happy birthday, Dave, my brother David. It's his birthday today. And it's always fun having your birthday on May 14th because, you know, every 7 years you get to have your birthday on Mother's Day. So anyway, happy birthday, Dave. You're getting to be an old man, but we won't talk about that. The other thing that I wanted to mention real quick, because immigration is such an issue, and I'm not sure if John's going to be talking about immigration any tonight, that may be one of their topics, but I want to make sure people know, first off, don't believe anything these other parties say. Forget, the parties mean nothing, okay? 844 pages that they're trying to change now is no different than Obamacare. Let's pass the bill before we figure out what's in it routine. So please do not assume anything about that bill or assume the worst, because that's going to be the truth. But more importantly is what is happening today is not so unique. I mean, immigration is not something new. Illegal immigration is not something new. Please do a little bit of your history and go back and see what President Eisenhower did when he was in office. If you go out there and you look at the numbers, compare the situation today compared to what he dealt with then, he was able to take care of illegal immigration in no time at all. And I discussed this on the show last night, and I actually read one of the articles in reference to what Eisenhower did to stop immigration, illegal immigration, over the southern border. And there's absolutely no reason why we can't do that today, except that we don't have any leadership or ethics or integrity in Washington, D.C., or in public office.
Amen.
The situation.
Amen.
I mean, it truly is no different. So when they say that we got to do something, make sure you take the article from Eisenhower. And let me see if I have the full name of this one article I've been using. And I want to make sure it's called How Eisenhower Solved Illegal Border Crossings from Mexico. You go do a search, and if you're in the chat room right now, I put a link out there so you can take the link and go directly to it. And this was written by John Dillon, July 6, 2006. The point is, this is a very manageable problem if we had some kind of ethics and integrity in public office. There is nothing uniquely different today than what Eisenhower dealt with in the 50s. So when you hear the nonsense from the political parties, Marco Rubio here in Florida, excuse me, gag me with a spoon, excuse me. Yeah, you can see I really have a lot of respect for Marco Rubio. When they say that there's nothing they can do, that we have to do something, send them the article about Eisenhower. Give them a lesson on what Eisenhower did to solve illegal immigration. It can be done if we had some ethics and integrity and will in Washington, D.C., and from the American people. Remember, 300 million people versus 545. And on that rant... On that rant, I will hand the show over to John. John, how are you doing tonight? And have fun.
I'm doing great, Sally. And thank you, Sally. And good evening, fellow Americans. And welcome to American Freedom Watch Radio. We're brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, and on RedStateTalkRadio.com. Also, if you would, please visit our websites at Agenda21Today.com. And AmericaIsMyName.org. And this is your host, John Estabrook. Karen Schoen tonight is performing a speaking engagement at Act for America in Melbourne, Florida. And I look forward to hearing from her next week of how that went for her. She's quite a busy lady and always is focused on getting the message and educating Americans. Tonight, I'm fortunate to be joined by fellow Louisiana citizens, Angela Lalise and Karen Champagne of the People LLC. And these ladies are battling in Baton Rouge on a daily basis when our legislators are in session. and have done quite tremendous work. Angela and Karen, how are you guys this evening?
We're fine.
We're great.
Thank you for having us, John.
Well, this is a pleasure for me. I always like to share what's happening in the state of Louisiana. I generally cover energy, and everyone knows that the energy sector and fossil fuels are under attack. So tonight we will breeze right past that. And if you guys would you give folks just a little background on the People LLC?
Sure. Go ahead, Karen.
Well, Angela and I actually met. We were both part of the Tea Party movement, and I guess we kind of woke up when everyone else did with the TARP and the stimulus spending that was going on in Congress. And so we had met at a Tea Party rally, and it occurred to me that she and I had a lot of the same things in common. I had actually been reading a lot of the proposed legislation at the time, and we kind of started to look at what was going on with the state legislation, and it just hit me that basically the state was doing exactly what the federal government was doing, creating public-private partnerships, nonprofit agencies, and commissions to oversee a lot of, you know, what was going on, and bypassing elected officials, and that the states were also being enticed to do so with federal dollars and grants. So it became apparent to us that we needed to start focusing more on our state level. We can actually drive to Baton Rouge, whereas it's kind of difficult to drive to D.C. And, you know, we wanted to work on maybe turning our state around, and hopefully that our state would be able to lead the way, I guess you could say, for more states to do the same thing and kind of protect our nation from the state level.
Excellent. And you know, that's an important thing that we see taking place in this patriotic movement, the American movement. I'm not going to refer to it as a Tea Party movement, although the Tea Party is a very integral part of it. It's an American movement, and it's concerned American citizens. And the key aspect that everything needs to go back local and on our state level, and that's where the huge attacks are. So working inside your state, wherever you're listening from, it is a key part to taking back and restoring the free republic that is supposed to be America. And I know
it
that
is,
Angela, huh?
We got quite a wake-up call when we actually started going to Baton Rouge because our legislators were not really glad to see us.
Imagine that.
You know, and so that's why we had to name ourselves. I mean, it was pretty apparent that they only wanted to deal with lobbyists. Every time you try and talk to them, they want to know, before they say, you know, even listen to your question, they wanted to know who you were with. And it was quite amazing. So we really just decided that we needed to be with somebody. So we came up with the name The People, and we formed an LLC so that when they ask us now, we can say we're with The People LLC. And
so it opens up a door and gives you a voice then.
Exactly. So,
it also,
so you're doing business with the good old boys on how they have got it designed, and that's very true. That just an average citizen is not going to be listened to very often in any of the state capitals. Unless we go as groups or we have some type of lobbyist, if we're able to afford lobbyists to go and lobby for the people, we're not listened to, we're not heard. So the idea that two ladies joined your energy and took the time to form an LLC and to do everything just to be able to have a voice is impressive.
Thank you, John. You know, this is the thing. We were determined that we were going to get them to consider a regular taxpaying citizen as a stakeholder. You know, the stakeholders all get a seat at the table, but the only stakeholders not being represented were the everyday citizens, taxpaying, and even those that don't pay taxes. None of us are being represented. And so we decided that we were going to insist in our own way, demand a seat at that table. And we took a lot of abuse, a lot of rudeness, a lot of progressive techniques, you know, were thrown our way to try to discourage us. But, you know, we have our kids in our heads when we go and when we do any of this. And so they really had to come up with a lot more than that to discourage us. That's not, rudeness is not going to stop us. We just let that bounce off and keep going. And so as a result, after we got through that 09 year at the legislature, in 2010, they started to pretend to be polite, which was nice. It was new. And now they're actually, you know, depending on the issue, depending on where we're at on that issue, you know, they're actually at least listening to what we have to say. And that's
you guys
that's
are actually headway. Going in and able to question and also give testimony to some of the congressmen and our senators. And that's impressive. When I go and I view the work that you guys are doing, I am awfully impressed with the fact that they are giving you a seat at the table. And your questions and the relevancy that you speak to the needs of the people all the time is so important, because I don't think that Baton Rouge is any different than any other state. And until people, you know, and I know Karen Schoen, she is rigorous about being in Tallahassee and spends a lot of time on the highway and the road just to make sure that she has a seat at the table with her legislators. And hopefully people around the nation are doing that. And I think that we are, and we're finding a voice, and we're starting to break apart some of the old boy rudeness.
Yes. And the other part that we found valuable, too, was that we just decided that we would talk to anybody and share the finding. We would speak to anybody, anywhere. As long as they had one good ear, we would talk to them if they wanted us to. And as a result, you know, we went past the conservative realm. You know, not that we left behind, we're definitely still speaking to people in the conservative realm, but we were willing to go to Occupy. They invited us to present the conservative viewpoint as an example, and it was astounding because real nice people that were there, and I don't know what they were expecting exactly from us, but they didn't get it. And when they didn't get it, and what they got was the truth about the republic and the freedom that that offers in a constitutional republic, which evidently many of them had never heard about, seriously. And they just wanted to know more of that. I mean, the way Karen says it is beautiful. She said they just wanted to know more about this freedom of which we spoke. It was incredible. And that taught us that we all, as neighbors and just in our own community, it's important for us to state the obvious, what's to us obvious, state the obvious to even those that we think would never be receptive. Because when people hear the truth, they understand it, they get it immediately, and they want more of it. And that's been our experience.
And that's a great thing that, you know, we're experiencing that. We've got a newspaper that we're putting out, and it started in Florida, and it was a great idea, and it's taken off, and it's in 7 states now. And it's just the American Patriot News. And all we offer people is the truth. And we stand to that principle, and that's one of the principles of our founding. And if we state the obvious, which is the truth most times, and if we don't avoid the truth and we speak the truth to people, there's a great thirst. There's a great outreach to people want to listen and understand the truth. They will leave their political ideology behind because they soon become very aware that they're being lied to, and no one wants to be lied to.
That's absolutely it.
And I think that's true for our legislators. You know, many times, in conversation with the few that I try to converse with, because I don't I guess I find it difficult to find men of principle, honor, and integrity. But when I do find them, and we have them in Louisiana, and we have them in our legislature, they will seek you out to get information, to get the truth, and they want to also, you know, they have operated with blinders, and, you know, we all think as citizens that the people that we've elected are very capable people and that they have enough education that they're going to delve and do the work that you and Karen are doing, that I do, that we expect that they're going to do that, and the fact is they haven't. You know, they've come from vast different walks of life, and they chose politics and the political game and the realm, and they may be great successful politicians, but they really are not very capable when it comes to knowing what is happening and what the truth is. When you speak about Agenda 21, I can remember even Tea Party groups inside the state of Louisiana telling me to leave that alone, that was a conspiracy theory, and you know that really. But the fact is that any individual with a computer can get on the internet, and you can go find out on the United Nations webpage everything you need to know about Agenda 21, sustainable development, and all of their goals and their plans, and then it will lead you in all different directions. But the truth is there; it exists,
and it
is up to us as citizens to enlighten these great minds that we think we've elected and sent off to our state capitals with the truth and share what we learned, because trust me, they're not seeking it out. They're up there and they've got a piece of legislation that maybe pertain to just a handful of their constituents, their stakeholders and stakeholders. That's directly, you know, that's one of the ways that Agenda 21 has become so deep rooted in our nation. You know, they listen to various people that have money interest, the corporations, the lobbyists, and they listen to them, and they promote what these stakeholders think is a good way forward, but they don't even ask, you know. And then when they do have citizen outreaches, a town hall meeting, what a scam! Because the bottom line is that when they leave there, the stakeholder has more in that pocket of that politician and the self-interest of serving that politician in his next political campaign many times. And I think that's a key aspect of why we've got the government that we've got. These guys are perpetual runners for the next term. You know, they have a lifestyle and retirement packages that average citizens can't get. So they're willing to take on whatever these stakeholders choose and forget the citizens and leave the citizens behind as an afterthought, and that's why we've got the government that we've got. I wanted to shift gears because I know one of the things that is happening all across the nation in 45 states is that we have accepted our state's Common Core standards for education, and I know you two ladies have been battling the Common Core issue here in Louisiana. I'd like to get your take on what's happening inside Louisiana with Common Core, and just fill the listeners in, if you would.
Karen?
Go ahead, Angela. I'll let you start.
Okay. Well, in Louisiana, we've had standards based on international benchmarks and standards that come from UNESCO that tie right into Agenda 21 Millennium Goals with Education for All.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had those all these years since No Child Left Behind. And we have them in various forms. Everybody knows about LEAP. Well, LEAP, you can trace to that. The civics curriculum, which they call the new civics, we the citizen, we the people, the citizen, and the Constitution. That also is traced back to that. The GLOBE program, which is science, traces back to that. And so now Common Core is the next incarnation of this. And I know there's information out there saying that it's not internationally benchmarked and it's not international standards, but it actually really is. And we're going to be putting information out about that so people can see it. it takes quite a lot of digging and connecting, but you get there. So here we are with the latest incarnation, and bottom line is that we have the stakeholders fighting over the money. And this has been framed as a federal versus state issue for a lot of people. But for Karen and me, the way we see it is it's a UN versus US issue.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, we can fight over whether federal overreach, which where isn't the federal government overreaching at this point? We can all agree on that. But if we put in the same international standards and benchmarks at the federal or the state level, which we can see now that it doesn't matter which we go with, they keep putting in international benchmarks and standards. So the problem really isn't which standards we use. The problem is that we're using standards at all. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, in the 50s, say, you know, we were the greatest nation on earth, education second to none. Nobody even heard of standards. Now, we did have them, but, you know, they more reflected America at that time. And so it was more of common sense curriculum that we had. Teachers had autonomy to discipline and to teach in creative ways that they brought to the table. And as a result, the school boards were in control of the educational system in their communities without state interference, without top-down directives. Each community school board directed the schools according to what was important to that community. So as a result, you had this smorgasbord of choices. Talk about school choice. We had it then. Because if I wanted to decide on a place to live, people just would look at the schools and
Absolutely.
Say, oh, you know what? I like this system. They value this, this, and this above this, this, and this, and that really fits in with what I want my child to be influenced by. And they're very strong on fundamentals, and I know that's what my kid needs. And so you would pick your school based on that. So our country was full of cultural diversity. We want diversity. We had it then. Standards kind of does away with diversity because we're going to make everybody the same. And
absolutely, and that's a key element of what Common Core is going to bring. You know, we're actually going to stop the diversified education that we once had and totally wipe it out. And the Common Core standards are the final end game, and that's what people need to be real aware of. We are just a couple of years from full implementation in 45 states across America. And when that happens, you know, when we start to look at, and I guess either one of you guys familiar with Charlotte Isserby?
Thoroughly, she's one of our heroes.
We don't have many. And she's one of mine also. And you know, Charlotte actually dug out the documents and released documents. Ended up losing a pretty good job inside of the Reagan White House. When she started to delve into it and to look at the shift in education. And I think the shift really started under Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society. And if we go back and we look at all of the implemented things that took place in the leap in social justice movement in the progressive movement under Lyndon Johnson, then I think that when we go back and you can plot it and you can look at the downfall of the education of the American children to that time frame. But Charlotte, you know, in digging out the documents and finding out where this shift, why it was being created, and finding the root and the core. And this education and Common Core standards is designed after the Soviet Union system, you know, and what they had in place, because they didn't, you know, teach the child necessarily. They collected data on a child, and that's one of the great harms that's taking place across the nation right now, is the implementation of this database on every child that will enter school, you know, and then there'll be data will be collected on each child in the elementary time frame, and then by the time they reach to high school, a course will be designed for them, and their life will be planned, and their training will be plotted for them, and their way forward will be as designed to meet the needs of the global economy. And that's
but
where
you know
the
that,
link. Go ahead.
John, that's what people don't understand. I think they're beginning to pick up on, but the people that we've spoken to a lot, it's hard because they steal our language. They mean in the politicians and stakeholders that are working against us, against our republic, the globalists, thank you. And they steal our language. And so we hear, you know, we need Common Core because, you know, it's going to help us to create a workforce. Well, I have a little business, and granted, I need a workforce to keep that business going. But the workforce they're talking about is not mine. It's not yours. They're not talking about creating the workforces, setting things up so we can create workforces for ourselves. They're talking about us supplying our kids as human capital for their workforces. And that's
absolutely
what we're not going to stand for. We're just not going to stand for it. And that's where the data comes in. And Karen, you could take off on the data part of it because it ties in.
Well, a lot of, we have to think about, too, listen to exactly what they're saying a lot of the times. I mean, our schools weren't failing until they told us they were failing. they created failing schools by testing our children. A lot of these tests, we can't see. In fact, I don't think we've ever been able to see any of them.
No.
So
the first time
parent,
I met you two ladies, that was something that you guys shared with me in Lafayette. And that when I left there, then I was just dumbfounded that that was the case. But then when I started to do my own research, and that's what we all have to do, I found that to be the truth. Parents parents can't see the test that these children are given.
Teachers
very seldom get to see the test.
So what are they testing our children on? And when you look at how egregious the Common Core is and what they're trying to implement with Common Core, just that one set of standards, you know, aside from all the standards that we already have brought in by UNESCO, but if they're telling us that our children need these standards, which teach communism and planned economy and things that we really don't want our children to be taught, and this is what they need in order to succeed globally and compete internationally and to pass the test. Well, do we really want our children taking those tests? Is this what they've been testing our children on all these years? Is that why our children aren't passing these tests? You know, we really need to ask these questions because we can't see the test. We're just supposed to take the word of people with agendas, you know, they have the answers to all of the questions that they're asking, you know, and they're manipulating the system so that everything falls into place. Are they manipulating our children in our school system? I believe they are.
Well, it's an indoctrination. It's gone past. Our children are being indoctrinated into a socialist way of thinking. You know, it's visible when we go inside of our schools. If we'll just take the time to go to your local school and just watch award ceremonies, you see it in Little League baseball fields, and we see all of this to where, you know, used to there was a winner and a loser, and that was quite all right. You know, if you lost, you would have enough drive and determination if you were that kind of a person, and you would drive to do better, drive to improve. That was the American way. That is American exceptionalism. When I fall down, I pick myself up. I don't rely on the government to pick me up. But they're teaching and indoctrinating our children into this social justice movement, and it is about a global economy. And I'm going to read, and I'm on corestandards.org. So anybody that's got an Internet connection can go to corestandards.org, and you can read the mission statement. The Common Core State Standards provide a consistent, clear understanding of what students are expected to learn, so teachers and parents know what they need to do to help them. The standards are designed to be robust and relevant to the real world, reflecting the knowledge and skills that our young people need for success in college and careers. With American students fully prepared for the future, our communities will be best positioned to compete successfully in the global economy. Now, folks, we have an independent, free market economy. At least that's what our nation and our republic was designed to give us. And now we have allowed the media, our politicians, to tell us that we have to position ourselves for the global economy. What in the world was wrong with the free, independent nation that our founding fathers gave us, to where Americans took care of Americans when other people needed assistance because we had surpluses of all the food that we required for every citizen? You know, when I look at the standards of living and all of the things that this global economy has given to the American worker, it is shameful that we accept it. And that's the same thing with this education and Common Core curriculum and the Common Core standards. We are accepting it, and we're not pushing back. Now, I know you two ladies are pushing back in Baton Rouge and everywhere that you speak, and there are a lot of us. But when you look at the population of Louisiana, how many citizens are standing shoulder to shoulder with us? How many teachers, you know, when they if they'll leave their union needs and their union requirements, and if they'll leave that thinking behind, and if they're truly teachers and they want to have an education system that functions to better the life of a student, then they should be joining us in outrage and standing in Baton Rouge and saying, no, we're one out. Our governor may have accepted Common Core, and I understand the need for federal dollars, and that's exactly why Governor Jindal did it. Trust me, it was all about money, and it always is with these politicians. But our children are the ones that are being indoctrinated, and we have to stop it. I mean, we are in the end game. It'll be fully implemented in Louisiana. Maybe you guys, I guess the last time I looked, is 2015 the deadline to have it fully implemented?
Well, 2014 is according to Millennium Goals when they're supposed to have all this in place. So you can move into the next phase. And Governor Jindal's got his pedal to the metal. Bound and determined as a good little globalist that he's going to make sure that he meets all of these goals if no other state does.
Right, and we need to be careful too and not just focus, I think, on Common Core, because Angela and I have discovered that they believe that school readiness begins in the womb. And so they're actually going for our children from pre-birth. And that's why we constantly telling people it's more than just Common Core. We really need to focus on everything that they're doing, because you can't just stop part of it. It all works together. And if we just stop one piece of it, they have another piece that'll fit right in. They're prepared for it. So they've actually been, you know, putting in these international benchmarks and standards into our education system already for Louisiana. And so they've been doing it nationwide. So it's not just about stopping this one set of standard. It's about stopping international benchmarking, period.
And, you know, when we had a panel discussion on the North Shore, we had great attendance by Jim Garvey, the vice chair of BESSE, and Senator Crow was there, Representative Pearson, St. Tammany Parish, many of the school board members came. I hope I'm not leaving anybody out. Representative Garofalo's assistant came. And that was all great. But when it came down to it, they were willing to put in the resolution, which does not carry the force of law. It makes a statement, yeah, but it does not carry the force of law. It's not going to stop anything. But when we point blank asked Senator Crow, when he kept pushing the resolution idea, would you be willing, any of you, to sponsor the legislation saying that no international benchmarks or standards would be allowed in our educational system? He had a one-word answer for us, and that was no. And I appreciate
that's
his
fear.
Candor. appreciate it.
And their idea, they're trying to get everyone about behind this Senate concurrent resolution that states, you know, that, that requests that BSEE not implement Common Core. Well, let me tell you something. The state legislator in the 2009 session passed SB 316, which is now Act 257, because it was signed by Governor Jindal, requiring BSEE to implement college and career readiness standards for our state and for our schools. So this was actually a law that was put into place that was required by the legislature. So just a simple resolution, we're chasing rainbows. It's not going to do anything.
And
we
the college
need for them to not fund it, you know, that would be the first step, and the second step would be to repeal it.
And the college and career readiness is the key, because the standards that meet the requirements for the Race to the Top money have to have two components. One, they have to be internationally benchmarked, and two, they have to provide for career and college readiness. And in the United States at this time, there's only one set of standards that meet that definition, and that's the Common Core. So that's why that legislation was passed. Of course, we can see that now in hindsight. And that's...
Well, actually, that's one of the problems that the opponents, some of the opponents of Common Core have, is that it only stipulates college and career readiness. And they're, I mean, some of the opponents for Common Core are the ones that are putting forth that the Common Core standards are not internationally benchmarked, because that's what they wanted to say, that they're internationally benchmarked.
They wanted to say internationally benchmarked, but they want to replace college and career readiness with research-based.
Right.
Because then if standards that they've written meet the definition for the grant money.
Right.
So people.
Well, and that's, you know, that is the way of socialism, and that's the way of communism. As soon as the citizens become aware, and the citizens are becoming aware, as they chase what they think they've got the rabbit, and they've caught the rabbit, and then actually what they'll do is they'll release 10 more rabbits, and they'll call them a different name, and renaming
right.
things and redesigning it to make it palatable to the, I guess, the American people, you know, have been dumbed down. You know, this indoctrination didn't start in this last 10 years. This is an indoctrination, like I said, that's taken place since 1965.
And, but it's more than that, John, because it's more than that. We say it's not any of our faults. I mean, we were busy working for the American dream, trying to make good lives for our children. We aren't supposed to have to do what you and Karen and I and many, many others are doing. We're not supposed to have to do this just to make sure that they don't take our children's Bill of Rights away. So,
absolutely.
You know, we were in a sense sleeping because we didn't realize the evilness and the tyranny that was taking hold in our state capitals and in Washington. But, you know, I'm not going to hold us accountable for that, although we have to hold ourselves accountable to fix it. And the other thing is, when it comes to teachers, if people can just understand, because I know I've been seeing this a lot, people don't understand why many teachers are not up in arms over the Common Core standards. We talk to a lot of teachers. These standards don't look so much different than anything they've been given all these years since No Child Left Behind. It's just the next
mm-hmm.
thing. And every time they're given a new set of standards, they're given new paperwork, new requirements, all this extra stuff that takes them away from the one thing they really care about, which is teaching the kids. And so it's just, you know, they screamed about that forever. I remember them screaming about it. And, you know, none of us knew enough to even jump in to help or to complain. And so now here we are with this set of standards. They're not so concerned with the standards. They screamed about that 20 years ago. Nobody heard them. So now
mm-hmm.
the data collection does concern them greatly, as does the testing. And so that's where we can all come together. It's also possibly two areas where we can come together and derail all of this Common Core. So it's just another way to look at it. when we think of our teachers who are also our heroes and who have been working under the system all these years and not liking it. And they come near tears when they talk about what they see these tests doing to these kids and the kids asking them for help and them not being able to help. And our teachers are being put in a sad place too.
That's insane. To me, it's insane. They can't even look at the tests. The teachers can't see it. The parents can't see it. And yeah, we're supposed to sit here and take our word and take their word for it that all of our schools are failing based on these tests that no one can see.
And, you know, we had this discussion with Chaz Romer, the now president of BESSE, or chair of BESSE. And we had this at a Tea Party of Louisiana event. And he was very good, very about having the dialogue with us. And we just kept giving him examples and asking him, you know, well, how do you know? Did you see the test? Well, no, I didn't see the test. Well, how do you know? And we just kept throwing out examples because the test did get loose back in the 90s. And so we do have those kinds of ideas in addition to the horrible homework that comes home. And so throwing that out, well, how do you know? And finally he just put both his hands up and he said, I don't know. And that's the bottom line. Nobody can tell us. If my kid scores mastery or below basic, either way, I want you to prove it to me. I want to see it.
Yeah.
I don't want to just see the
data. And that's kind of the way that, you know, we used to have to carry our homework assignments and all our tests home to our parents, and our parents got to view what we were failing at. And many times, you know, they were the ones that would pick us up and be able to at least guide us and help us. And if we needed tutoring, find that. But how do you do that with a child that you don't even know what test they fail? That's amazing.
Yeah, it's shocking. It is. And that's also why we fought so hard against the education reform package. And we fought, ultimately filed an amicus for the Act II lawsuit because we felt so strongly that school choice, first, is a misnomer, and second, that it is the vehicle for them to put Common Core not only in the public schools, but also to do away, in essence, with private education by having the privates to accept the kids and vouchers teach the same thing. And homeschoolers who want a diploma from the state have to teach the same standards, to the same standards. And so ultimately it's the way for private education to be completely taken over with the same indoctrination, while the corporations who are making the money off of all the data they're going to buy and all the educational resources they have to go with it now, you know, they're taking over the public school system. And so,
sure.
I don't know, fascism on steroids, that's what I call it.
Right. I mean, you have to think of it now. They've created the education industry, and it's a $1.2 billion a year industry just in our nation. And they're looking at it globally. So globally, it's a $3 trillion industry because they're actually implementing the same program in other countries. And the goal is for everyone to be taught the same, to the same test, so that no nation basically is any greater than any other nation.
And that's one of their, I've heard that selling point on multiple occasions and trumpeted by school board people and some of the politicians. You know, that a child leaving the fifth grade in the first 9 weeks in Louisiana would be able to go to the fifth grade in the first 9 weeks anywhere else in the United States and pick right up, and, you know, that they wouldn't miss a beat. Well, what in the world is that all about? And how important is, you know, let me tell you. One,
yeah.
People select where they live. They select where they live by their schools. We used to.
Exactly.
You know, I wanted to live in a great school.
Well, we're not supposed to move around in the new global economy either. We're just supposed to stay put where they put us.
Exactly. It's amazing how they have given us so many fronts and so many battles to wage, and we have to dig through the roots and have to go through everything when they change the names and they make it palatable. And the bottom line and the ultimate direction is a global system of governance for every citizen. You know, we will live in developments, and how they choose for us to
look
the square
at
footage,
China.
Every home will look alike. What's that?
Look at China. They are constantly holding China up as an example. That has to tell you something. They're telling us that the children in China are outperforming our children on standardized tests. Okay, that's got to tell you something. When you think about the research that has been done on standardized tests proves that when children take these tests, they have to put the questions into context. And so what they do is they draw on life experience, okay? And so if all children don't have the same background, the questions might not mean the same. They might interpret them differently, so they're going to answer them differently. So in order to fix that problem, they're literally coming out with preschool standards now, okay? And that's that school readiness begins in the womb, because we need to standardize their childhood and standardize their childhood experiences so that they perform the same on these tests. They're holding up China as an example because they're not a free people. They're pretty much already standardized. So those children are drawing on similar lifestyle experiences. So they're able to.
Yeah, when they look at one Chinese family, it says the same thing as the next Chinese.
Right.
But, you know,
exactly.
And when we say China, it's communist China. We're going to grade and we're going to elevate our children to a communist China standard.
I'm not impressed
not in my
when
lifetime.
They tell me. Right, exactly. I'm not impressed when they tell me that we're being compared to China.
Well, and the thing that whenever they compare us to China, and they hold China up as the standard, I can't get the vision out of my head of these people who, you know, live, work, eat, go to church, buy groceries, are entertained all in the same block, and they're fenced in, and the fence has to be really high because people are jumping to their deaths. And they're losing their human capital when that happens. And what struck me was
I was just going to say that they need to look at the suicide rate. And if you want to hold up a standard, look at communist China and their suicide rate versus any other nation on the planet. And there's a reason for that.
And exactly. And the thing that is so striking to me and so sad at the same time, and also that gives me hope for our country and our state, is those people have known no other life. They don't know that there's something else. And yet,
well, about five years ago, I had the great pleasure of seeing. Exactly. Let me share this story. I was in Las Vegas, and it's about 5 years ago. And we were going to see Cirque du Soleil, one of the shows, Love, but we. We're going in to see the show, and up pulls a bus, and it's loaded with little Chinese people. And the little Chinese people get off the bus, and they all have cameras, and they're all taking pictures, but they're working and going as directed by the people, there were four people that instructed them where they would go. When they seated them inside the theater, the first one sat down in the first seat, and then the second one walked to the second, and they went down the row in that order. And when they got up, they left in the same exact reverse order because that's the way it was told to them. You know, and I looked at it, and I said, how sad is that, to where they couldn't get up to even go to the restroom without having someone with them. Now, and we're holding that standard of living, that lifestyle, that communist lifestyle, as something that we want for our children, It's amazing to me.
And even though they know nothing else, that's the only life they've known, they still went out of it so desperately they're willing to jump.
Yep.
That tells you the innate sense of dignity and right to freedom that we all have. And no other country on earth has experienced it like we have. And so that's where I get a lot of hope from. And that's why Karen and I continue to educate people. And even when we get blocked, we just bounce off and keep going and keep talking to somebody, because we feel like enough people understand the big picture, the full picture, that then, you know, they can't stop us. We will overturn this.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody has the motivation than when it comes to their children.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I equate it all the time, and I guess it, every week I say the same thing. This is a 100-year effort by
mm-hmm.
the progressive and socialist and communist movement to control America. And if we are not willing to take on that 100-year task for restoration, then we need to get out of this game, because we're playing against a stacked deck. This has been so deeply rooted, the indoctrination of our college campuses. That's already been done and it's completed. I mean, we are going to have to stay focused.
Mm-hmm.
We have to restore the principles of the founding fathers. And you know, that's one of the things when I look at Louisiana curriculum, and I guess it was a few years back that I was outraged, and I made it a point to go into the local school board and share my outrage with them on what history was being taught to high school students, and the fact that, you know, history started in Louisiana high schools at Reconstruction. And I was outraged, you know, where will a high school student who now is capable of understanding the principles of liberty and freedom and who our founders were, why aren't we teaching them history from the founding of the nation so that they will know what it is they're losing? And I held every school board member, to a man and to a woman, to the task. You must restore history of a fact-based nature in Calcasieu Parish. But yet, they said they have no choice in it. You know, they don't get to choose this curriculum.
They haven't had a choice.
And how sad is that? Our elected people have no voice.
They have no voice, and everything is being dictated from the top, which is why when the education reform package was being put through, it was so horrible to hear the teachers being vilified. And nobody having enough knowledge of actually what the situation was for enough people to come to their defense. And this is not a union versus non-union thing. That doesn't even come into it for us. This is a neighbor and family member who we live around the block from or across the street from, teacher, person, who was vilified and blamed for something that not even their school board or superintendent had control over, never mind them.
Yeah.
They haven't had control over what gets taught or how the kids are disciplined or really anything. They've had no control for years, decades, and yet they were made the scapegoats by our administration just for the sake of passing this. And to that, all I can say is, first they came for the teachers, and we all need to remember that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And they're not really getting rid of the unions, because they're really shuffling in the new union, which is the Teach for America, which is part of the National Service Corporation.
So that was a farce, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
ladies, let's take just a little break and let me identify, and that's something that I've got to do like here at 54 after. You're listening, folks, to American Freedom Watch Radio. We're brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, and on RedStateTalkRadio.com. And we always ask, if you would, to please visit our websites, Agenda21Today.com and AmericaIsMyName.org. And when you go to agenda21today.com, if you would, take the time to upload and read our newsletter. We keep current. This week's coverage is Benghazi and the Internal Revenue Service pursuing and I think that we may be watching the undoing of this administration, or at least that's my prayer. When we see citizens who are only concerned citizens forming groups and doing things to the letter of the law, and then we have the Internal Revenue Service, the strong arm branch of the executive, going and vilifying and holding up paperwork processes, asking for lists of names of citizens, or what is it that you're going to say, and if we go back and we look at history and everything evolves and revolves around our history as humans, and we look at the tactics of the Gestapo, well, you've got an Internal Revenue Service that is using Gestapo-like tactics, and they would have us believe that it was just a few people in a small office in Cleveland that made these choices and decisions to go after conservative Americans, when we all know deep in our hearts that the conservatives have stood up and we've said no more, and we've done it under many different banners, many different names, the Tea Party movement, Patriot movements, but we are conservative, principled Americans. First and foremost, I have never been to a Tea Party rally or any event, a 9/12 event, any event anywhere in this nation to where all I saw was concerned American citizens wanting the restoration of the free republic that we're guaranteed in our Constitution. It's a constitutional guarantee, and yet we have good Republican politicians stand and talk about our democracy. We are not a democracy. We were not designed to be a democracy. This is a free republic, and we will see it restored, and we have to prepare ourselves and be ready to take that task on. So, and when you download our newsletter, there are great authors and people that are relevant to the conservative movement are always sharing the truth and the information that Americans must have, so that we can have hope that there is a battle that we can wage and restore this great nation to its prominence. And I have great hope of that. I know in my heart of hearts that the American people are an exceptional people. There are no people greater on the planet Earth. And once they are unleashed, and once they recognize what has been done to them, that their outrage will propel this movement to restoration, and we can rekindle the fire that our founding fathers blessed us with. And we were truly blessed, and we are a blessed nation still today, and we have to stand up in that recognition. And that's what this movement, that's what this radio show, American Freedom Watch Radio, that name, Karen and I, spent a couple of days, what is it that we want to call ourselves, and what is it that we want to share? And our mission statement is very simple. We want to share an American truth with American citizens that freedom and liberty are under attack, and that the only way that we can restore it is if we stand up and we take our actions. And your actions don't have to be the actions of Angela or Karen, but you definitely need to join shoulder and shoulder with them, support them in their efforts, support every effort that's going forward to restore your freedom. And sometimes that looks like all you do is reach in your pocket and you give them a dollar. Whatever that looks like to you, what that action is, but it's required that every American, it's a civic duty that we start to take action to turn back these tyrants. And that's what we have in Washington right now. That's what we have in Baton Rouge. And that's what we have on the local level. We have tyrants. We have public elected officials who are not listening, not allowing the people a voice in their government. When the local government takes a grant and the citizens aren't even asked, what anything that's attached to that grant, it's on our backs, our tax dollars, and we need to have that voice and say, no, Mr. Politician, that's not what I'd like to do with my tax dollars. and they're robbing us of that voice, and we can restore it, and there's a lot of ways to do it. All right, ladies, now we're back, and we'll pursue
John,
the next hour.
I'd like to open this hour, if you don't mind, since I was listening intently to what you were saying. As far as the fight goes, another thing that Karen and I really consistently try to get across to people is our belief that we have to fight with Louisianians. And by that we mean we need to stop following national organizations. And I'll give you a prime example. We're now faced with fighting Common Core, and we're faced now with fighting it, well, thanks to the ruling, maybe not, but Governor Jindal seems determined that he's going to fund the voucher program. So let's say he gets his way. We're faced with fighting Common Core, not only in the public schools, but even in the private schools and even in the home schools if they choose the certificate from the state, the diploma from the state. So here we are facing this because of school choice. We talked with legislators about it, and they told, this was before session, and they told us that we were crazy. At that time, many of the tea parties in the state were against school choice and asked us to speak up on their behalf, which we did. But we were told when we spoke up, and this was not in committee on video, but this was just in conversation, we were told, you're crazy. The tea parties want it. The tea parties, we've been talking to Freedom Works for three months. Freedom Works has been here 3 months, making sure we understood the tea parties wanted this. And the tea parties didn't want it, at least not the vast majority of them. And to
well,
try
you know,
to
Angela,
get that message
it,
across
it,
at that
yeah,
time
you,
was impossible.
Well, I hear where you're coming from, and I understand it. And I often confront it. Karen Schoen has been a battler against it. There are some simple facts that if we don't speak to them, then we're going to be ignorant, or we're going to claim ignorance, and we can't. Some of the national movements of the Tea Party movement have been co-opted by the very political system that we're battling. You know, they are Republican organizations. And they have an agenda that tends to stay political and stay to the body politic. And when we look at what was supposed to have been a grassroots movement, many groups are grassroots, and I support all grassroots efforts. But when we look at the great national organizations and the Tea Party movement, and we find out, well, where's your funding coming from? Where do you get the money for that? Where do you have all of this capital, you know, for these great national programs? And then you find out that when you go back to the roots, it's the Republican Party. And, you know, is that what I am an American first. I don't profess to be anything but an independent. And at one time, I was a really great Republican. I contributed to every Republican campaign that I could, and I worked on that until I realized, and it's a realization that every American must come to now. And we don't have time to wait another 4 years. We don't have time to wait another year. If we don't come to the realization, the failure that we're confronting with the federal government, the state government, and local government is the two-party system. Both parties have got equal amount of evil progressive people behind them and millions upon millions of dollars funding them and funding their agenda. So, yes, they will say, oh, I'm with Tea Party X. I'm with Tea Party. The Tea Party wants this. Well, what about the American citizen? And until we restore the right for the people to have a voice at every single level of government, when those guys get together in Baton Rouge and they pass legislation and look and read the volumes of this stuff that they put out, And then go back and ask them, well, how many people inside Louisiana had a vote and a voice on that? It's very seldom we get statewide vote voices. When our local governments take grant monies by the millions of dollars to fund their projects, stakeholder projects, they don't come and ask the citizens, what do you think about it, Mr. Citizen? It is our right to have that voice. I don't need the Republican Party or the progressive movement in the Republican Party, who have given us two failed presidential candidates, to select a candidate for me. I'm capable of doing the work, and that's what we all have to be diligent with, and we have to break back these national groups and these national organizations, because they are corrupt. And they may not see it as corruption, but if it doesn't go back to the people, to the citizens,
right,
because we the people are the power. I mean, this government, the only way it functions is when we stand up and say, hey, we've had enough.
Well, unfortunately, John, there is just no money to be had in representing the people.
No.
The problem.
I know, but now let me give you some
Constitution.
I know, but let me give you some examples. And that's why I always tell folks, you know, this is going to be a long, hard battle. Ted Cruz, Texas, was not the Republican Committee candidate for Texas. Rand Paul. You know, when we look at these guys, and even Marco Rubio, who I have very serious, you know, he sold himself as a Tea Party candidate, and he got Tea Party funding. Look at what happened with Scott Brown. So when we unite, we have great wealth. You know, when you take a million people with $5, then you got $5 million. But you have to convince the million people that your ideals are an American ideal, that you are not your ideology is American in its makeup, not party based. And you know, people ask me, well, what about, and Karen and I had this conversation last week, you know, what about forming a third party? You know, it's time for us to form a third party. No, it's ridiculous. We don't have that kind of money. We don't have that kind of funding to take on the Republican or the Democratic Party. But we do have the wherewithal as citizens from Louisiana, if we see a valuable candidate, a constitutional conservative that matches the American principles, and he's running in Utah, that we can all send a buck to Utah. You know, and when we see valuable, the work that you ladies are doing in Baton Rouge is indispensable. I promise you, when I go back and I look at your clips, sometimes I'm brought to tears, and I'm brought to tears because you voice a people, a citizen's voice. We have someone speaking out for us in Baton Rouge. But now how many people are watching what you're doing? How many people are seeing what you're doing? And that was why it was key for me. I wanted to get both of you on because you may not hear often enough the value that you create for the Louisiana citizens, and I'm certain that the Louisiana citizens don't know what it is that you're doing for them. You know, I mean, because when we go and all of us go and we speak, you know, if we've got, I guess, crowds of 80, 20, 30, wherever they need us to go speak, we're willing to go and we speak and we have the American conversation with like-minded Americans. But where are the roomful? You know, where is it where we walk into and it's shoulder to shoulder? And until we get that unity, and there's a great divide created by some of the Tea Party movements, because they are politically oriented. I mean,
that's what the national groups do. I mean, for me and for Karen, it's very simple. It's very basic. We are suspicious of anybody from outside of Louisiana who acts as though they care more about Louisiana than we do.
Absolutely.
It's none of their business. They should be in their state fixing it, because as far as we could see, there's not a state in the nation that's not going through the same thing we are. So why do they care? We don't need them. We have Cajuns, for God's sakes. There's nobody smarter on the face of the earth than a Cajun. And I'm saying that with 100% sincerity. I love my Cajuns. They are sly. They're smart. They can figure their way out of anything. And I like to say that I got a little bit of blood in me, by the way. So, you know, we don't need anybody from outside of the state. We just need each other. And that's what the national organizations don't want us to do. They don't want us talking to each other. And that's why Karen and I refuse to follow that. We are going to talk to anybody. We're going to talk to the welfare recipient because they don't know that they're being that they're under tyranny. We're going to talk to the high school kids. None of them know what free means. We have to teach people what free is because we're just old enough to remember a little bit of it. And so we're willing to talk to anybody.
Well,
you are. I'm way old enough. But, you know, these national groups can't have us talk to each other. And you know what?
No.
Everybody is under so much tyranny now that it doesn't matter if we think of ourselves as Republican or conservative or progressive and liberal. What we're finding is just the regular person on the street who could give a good hearty crap about their global economy, because that's not going to make me any money. You know? We just really are all experiencing and under the same thumbnail. And so that's the blessing in all of this. We're finally to a place where we can all realize that we're all suffering the same fate and we all went out. And so now is a golden opportunity for us to come together if we stop listening to national groups. And when the national groups come down and they can get meetings with representatives and senators in our capital, do you hear me getting angry, John?
Yeah.
And they can get meetings with them and citizens who pay their way and who support this state and all the NGOs that we're supporting that we shouldn't even be giving money to can't get a return phone call or email. Do you know how angry that makes me for those people? Karen and I sometimes get access. But for all the people who every time we say send an email and they do, pick up the phone and they do, and they never get a response, but somebody can waltz in from a national organization from out of town and get meetings? Are you kidding me? I got to stop now, Karen. You go ahead.
Well, it's outrageous. And I'm with you. I'm feeling your pain.
Thank you.
Because I'm right there with you, and it just tells me that they're putting money somewhere. And we don't have that kind of money to put. So, you know.
Well, we do if we unite. And see, that's a message that I have been told to shut up. I have been screamed at and hollered at in citizen meetings, you know, with so-called patriots in the patriot movement have told me to shut up. Because, you know, when I ask the question, what is it that we are bringing to the black community? Because trust me, not every black community is made up of welfare recipients. But I have nothing against a welfare recipient if they have a valid need for what they're taking. But what about the black worker? What about the black man that is being lied to by the Democrat Party? He's being totally ignored by the Republican progressive. Because they have just said, no, take them, take that. Where are the, you know, where are we as patriots? When I see a black man, I see an American. American first. So why aren't we there? Why is it that how many gays have we isolated inside this conservative movement? Because, you know, many on the religious right are not willing to even have a dialect. And all I'm saying is we have to have a united dialect because guess what? They feel it. They are feeling the same thing, the same tyranny that we feel. They know it's not working. And many of them have political leaders who are operating in a communist mode. And they know that. But we're saying because of just that handful of those leaders that we're not willing to have a dialect with, we should have a dialect with every American. Karen and I made a commitment last week to each other and on the air that we were going to make sure that we talked to 5 citizens in our community every day. If we have the opportunity, we were going to make that happen. just to go and make sure that we meet five new people every day, five citizens that share the American, and not tell them anything about who we are. We want to know what they are. What are they feeling? Because trust me, every worker in this nation knows our jobs have been shipped from this nation to a global economy. Every worker knows that.
They also
they don't
know
need, they don't need they don't need they don't need you. Huh? What was that, Karen?
They also know that their paychecks went down since January.
Sure. Really, they sure did. I happened to be on a rig that you know, there's 150 men out there daily, and boy, you talk about some outraged workers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you know what, John? Yeah. We're sitting there as Republicans. We're sitting there as Tea Party people. You know, I want to say to people from Occupy and people from any ethnic community that's a tight-knit community, everybody, just start talking to each other. Don't listen to any national group that has determined that they're going to dictate what we will and when we talk about and who we will speak to. Because as soon, our experience is just that as soon as you start speaking to people, if you're speaking about the Constitution and the freedom that comes with the constitutional republic such as ours was designed, who's not going to like that? Who's not going to like that? There's nothing not to like. It's the greatest system on earth. And so, you know, we just have to stop on the national groups because, like I said, and like Karen said, you know, if somebody from another state is taking time to come down to our state to fix our mess when they got the same mess in their state, there's
Absolutely.
Money being made somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's what it's about. That is the corruption that we face. These globalists are not millionaires; they're billionaires. You know, I mean, when you look at Soros, you know, look at our brother Al Gore there and his environmental movement, how many millions of dollars that man's made.
Well,
you know,
let's
so it's nothing for them. Yeah, there you go. Oh, Mr. Gates, a computer in every classroom, huh?
Oh, yeah, Mr. Promethean, you know, whiteboard in every classroom. But, you know, John, I promised somebody that we would speak about Act 3 a little bit. Which was the pre-K, universal pre-K, which they're passing legislation this session, and they will pass it, to, you know, implement it. Well, this is the thing that we have a video up, we have two videos up of when we spoke to Act 3 that people don't realize. When the Welfare Reform Act was passed, there were administrative laws written for its implementation, and they provided for full choice. And this was in order to ensure that a person who was receiving assistance could bring their babies anywhere they wanted so that they would not be excluded from Christian, any particular type of school that teaches a certain curriculum. They would be, they have full choice. And I mean, you know, as we said on video, we thought that was what this administration was all about. And yet what we're doing is we're taking parental choice away completely. And we have in this state, even as Governor Jindal was Secretary of DHH, we've been taking the parental choice away from parents while they have infants. And the way this is happening is, parents are supposed to be able to take a voucher, which they call a certificate in the system, anywhere they want. But the way our state has used it, the certificate, they're given the certificate, everybody gets a certificate. And you get the certificate and you're told you have to choose from a Class A center. Well, the Class A centers teach the NAACP curriculums. And that's UN, and so NAACP was created, for those who don't know, National Association for Education of Young Children, was created in order to bring the to get the UNCRC ratified in the United States. That's why they were created. And so their standards are what are in our Class A centers. And by and large, any training that even Class B center teachers get, it's NAICS affiliated, if not directly from NAICS. So instead of our state following the administrative law related to the Welfare Reform Act and giving the person a certificate and telling them to go to any center they want, the most important part of that law was that if they had a certificate and they went to, say, a church school that wasn't a Class A center, and they went to a church daycare center, when they handed that certificate over, the state would have no say-so over what that daycare center taught, period. That's what the law is today. And yet our administration, which we pointed this out to them on many more than one occasion, including meeting with then-Executive Counsel Stephen Wagespack, including writing and passing H.R. 82. Mr. Wagespack is now on the Bessie board. We wrote H.R. 82, and citizens across the state helped to pass that, and that details all of this. So they're well aware. They're still moving forward with this. Now, we had parental choice with the Welfare Reform Act if our state would have just implemented it correctly. But not only don't we have parental choice, but unless you're on assistance, you would not be aware of this. And to me, this is just horrible. And we have said this on video, but you can only have your baby, and we're talking about babies here, not at the daycare center for so many days in a certain period of time. Now, I can't remember the certain period of time, but let's say you're not allowed to have your child not at the daycare center for more than 5 days in a month. Let's just say that that's it. So if you're in college, you're on assistance, and you have your winter break, your Christmas break, you've got 3-4 weeks off, your baby still has to go. And you still have to put your finger, which they say don't call it a fingerprint, okay, well, digitized image of your thumb, checking in and checking out, or are they going to pull that assistance from you? Wow. Now, this isn't a matter of do we believe we should have a welfare system or not.
Right.
We have one. If we want to work on the welfare system, let's work on that. But when it comes to parental rights to even decide when your child, when your baby is in a daycare center or at home with you, I think people better join together. I think we all better start working together because that's
absolutely
frightening.
It is. And see, that's a piece of knowledge that thanks for sharing that, because I certainly wasn't aware that that was the way it was. And how deplorable, huh? That's deplorable.
It's just, I don't have words. And, you know, not to mention, you know, say there's a child care center, a church-run center, or any center that's not a Class A. They're about to do away with all this because they're going to put them all in school, right? So, but let's just keep it on the system the way it is for the moment. And what about a parent that doesn't have a car? What about a parent that doesn't have a car, but she's got to get to work, or she's got to get to school, or, heaven forbid, her kid can't miss another day, her baby can't miss another day, and there's a center right across the street from her house. But because the state is misapplying the funding, she has to walk, maybe, with that baby and maybe bad weather. And I'm not doing this to be melodramatic, but these are real situations that happen.
Yeah.
I just want to make it human. I want it to be a human experience for all of us. And she's got to walk or get a cab or whatever and get across town to get to the center that the state has decided is okay for her child to go to.
Hmm.
So there's real, and not only that, a lot of centers have closed because they can't compete against the state dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Because more and more people are on assistance. And so just like they're going to do, you know, basically erase private education if we can't hold firm on this Hatch thing. If we can't preserve private education, that's what they're doing with the private child care. We can't have that. We can't
Yeah, there's a reality that every listener is keenly aware of. Now, 47% of Americans are in that situation or similar situation. And the bottom line is that, you know, when we speak of government assistance and what the government provides, right now your government would like to have 100% participation and have every citizen in this nation reliant on these programs and reliant on them for everything that happens for us. And that's
I already have that, John. They just haven't put the hammer down on us yet. But because
we
all get tax credits, don't we?
Yeah.
We all take deductions, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
They're about to all be on Obamacare.
Yep.
Think about that. Does that mean we're all on assistance and we all have to send our babies away?
Well, we
might not, but does it?
Yeah.
We don't know, do we? We better come together, all of us, and we better tell these national groups to get out of our state.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's a good message because, you know, it is so logical, and your way to put it is a great explanation. You know, if those people that are traveling into your states are traveling from a state that is equally as corrupt, has equally the same amount of problems. You know, we have 45 states that have Common Core. You know, every state has got welfare assistance and how it's managed and how it's run. So why would anyone choose to leave their state to come into your state to fix your state unless they're being financed and money is being poured into their pockets to pass out and distribute in your state to have the will of a national organization imposed on the citizens of your state? You know, it's befuddling. I guess the volume and the vast number of issues that we're confronted with makes it almost impossible to become an expert on, you know, you might be an expert on one single thing, but they are attacking us on every human level.
If the national groups would get out of our state and stay, and we would just ignore them and make them have to go away, then we would have very good focus because we would only have to focus on our Bill of Rights at this point. Because, you know, we're clawing to hang on to any of them. But we
Absolutely.
Would only have to focus, our focus could be very clear, on the Constitution.
Right.
On the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
not on this.
We're constantly finding that we're having to battle, you know, against the global movement and then against the side that says they're against, you know, what you're saying you're against, but then you learn what their agenda is. And so really they're just coming in to replace one agenda with another agenda. And right, we probably would be further along if it wasn't for the national groups.
Bring up Lennon's comment, Karen. That's a great explanation of it.
Oh, now you're going to make me try and remember it.
Well, he just said that, and I'm not going to get it exactly right, but basically Lennon said that the best way to overcome or manage the opposition is to leave them.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
You follow the money. Follow the money, and time and time again, we followed the money with these national organizations that have come in here and butted their nose in, and as a result, we got exactly the opposite of what most of the people here wanted. And we find what their game is, and it's not American. It's global. It's a globalist agenda, and they're just trying to lead the opposition to all of us. And so that's why we have to come together. We have to come together for parental rights. We have to come together for our Bill of Rights. We have to just forget the labels and come together as Louisiana and United States citizens who have inalienable rights that we are not going to let our legislators forget.
Yeah. And that's the battle. I mean, that's it. We have to make them keenly aware that we're not going to allow them to forget us, the people. And that is, you know, that everything that I listen to and I see, and people working so hard, you know, and it was never meant to have to be this way, to, you know, but it is a city. So we've picked up the mantle and we're carrying it, but all across the nation, you know, people are just giving all they have to give. And it's not dollars, and we can't compete with the money, and we can't compete with the globalists and the national organizations that are co-opted by these global movements. Definitely are impacting every aspect of our lives in our states.
Most people in our state are upset with Bobby Jindal. Most people in our state don't agree with the things he's done, including our Supreme Court, by the way. Second time, ruled unconstitutional, first retirement, now Act 2. Guess what? If we push on Act 3, we might find that unconstitutional, too. And we're still waiting to hear on Act 1, which they're going to rule on.
Yeah.
Every day he's doing something unconstitutional. Every day a legislature is doing his bidding. So, you know,
is that you, Charlie?
Yes. I just want to let you know, excuse me real quick, we have a guest in the chat room, Bruno, who had a couple of comments and wanted to ask a question, so I was just going to read it for you real quick.
Oh, good.
Okay, Bruno says, it's all deplorable. Can the guest expand on something they mentioned in the first segment? What was in a standardized test they saw years ago? And then the other is, the out-of-state people have brought dog parks and bike paths to New Orleans while the crime rate is not addressed.
Mm-hmm. You're hitting that
two parts for you.
They're getting ready to address the crime rate with the community policing they're about to bring in. They're getting ready to address that.
Yeah, but the bottom line is that we have the globalist in New Orleans. You know, when folks look at Louisiana, we have to be very keenly, all of us, aware that New Orleans is an ickly city, and sure enough, they have fully bought into the global agenda for sustainable development. I said gender at the same time, huh?
Same thing.
At any rate.
Yeah.
The first part of the question was about anyone, you know, the copies of the tests that are on record. And those tests and the standards that Charlotte Isserby has on her website, and good gosh, I can't remember it, and I'd have to get back to the listener on that and maybe bring – I think we're going to have Charlotte on in the next 3 weeks. But the information is on her website, and if you'll just go and Google Charlotte Isserby, and you can pull it up.
I'm referring to another website that had put out information. I don't know if it's the same information.
There was a woman who, a parent in 90, I believe it was 96, an NAEP, National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is the motherlode of all of these tests. It got sent to her home by accident.
Oh.
She was just going to return it.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. Can you give us any insight, or the listener any insight, as to what was on the test?
Oh, yeah. And so she then, you know, turned it loose, basically. And thank God for that, because now we at least have some insight. But teachers were teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic at that time. This is even before, okay, No Child Left Behind. So they're still teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic. But the test only tested, only 18% of the test was testing what the teachers were teaching. The rest of it was collecting demographics for the data storage. They were starting their data collection. And it was measuring the children's values and belief system.
Yeah.
Now,
Social justice.
Have that going on even today. You know, we spoke at Bessie a couple of weeks ago, and we put those videos up if anybody wants to see them. But we spoke at Bessie because in St. Bernard Parish, the the tripod survey is being given. Teachers and parents and administrators can't see what's on it. It's a Bill Gates Foundation production. And it is asking the children, it's supposed to be asking the children about the classroom environment and the teacher's way of presenting things and, you know, how do they feel about all of that, although Superintendent White says that the kids are never surveyed about the values, beliefs, or feelings. But this is what it's advertised to do. What I found out from a child who had to take it is that they also were asking, does your family ever have someone spend the night, does your parent ever have someone spend the night a couple of days a week? Do you ever go with your parent to spend the night at someone else's house a couple of days a week? What's the highest level of education of anybody in your family? That's the same kinds of things that were being asked on the NAEP that got loose. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, talking about, you know, social justice issues, measuring kids' values in relation to that.
And that's exactly what they're designed to do. They're designed to verify whether or not the children are becoming socialized and prepared for the new global economy.
And getting back to
exactly
teachers, if the teachers were going in every day teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic, and the kids weren't being tested on that, wouldn't you call that a setup? I do.
Well, sure.
It's a very odd way that they're graded as well. They're not just graded, you got this right, you got this wrong. They factor in socioeconomic status of the child so that we're not just being graded. I guess the children aren't just being graded, but as a community we're being graded on equity, so to speak, on how equitable our community is. So it's more than just grading the child, and it's really not grading whether or not he knows his alphabet and his numbers.
And the other thing is that now we know, right, our teachers are graded and our schools are graded and our school board members are graded based on how a child scores on this test, okay? But we were allowed to go into a BSEE meeting, a meeting at BSEE, let me say, of the supervisors of the universal pre-K and all the brains that are putting together this universal pre-K system. It was a room of a stakeholder meeting. We got to be stakeholders.
And we got to hold the spot. I don't think you were.
I don't think so. But it felt good to pretend. And so there were like 20 to 30 people there. And they were all brainstorming. Of course, we sat there being pretty dumb. And the most amazing thing, and we said this on video also in committee against Act 3, the most amazing thing was that they ended it with one lady being very adamant that if we're going to insist that children in the schools be kindergarten ready, the children in our pre-K programs are kindergarten ready, what in the world are we going to do about the kids whose parents choose not to send them to pre-K? And guess what the answer was? At some point, we will have to devise a way to assess the parents.
Well, I mean, that's ultimately where it's going to go. I mean, they're already doing it. when they start asking, what's the highest grade level in your household, you know, that your parents.
Yep.
Right.
And trust me, that's exactly, I mean, that's communism 101 right there. You know, they have to take control of the children away from the parents. They have to make all the little children look exactly alike. And that's every communist society on the planet. We have a lot of history of where this comes from. Where these standards were developed, why they were developed, and it was to meet the training requirements that the Soviet Union had. And now the same thing applies to us.
And
their
battle cry is we have to hold the schools accountable.
Oh,
Someone
yeah.
Someone has to be held accountable.
Well,
let me ask you. I mean, you know, there's facts, and I love being able to just share truth. The truth is since 1965, the education level of every American child has declined. You know, when we grade a child on fact-based education, the American children are failing. Okay, but yet we have, as a nation, spent more dollars and thrown more public dollars, taxpayer dollars, at education than at any time in history. And we continue to do that. How many political candidates have each one of us heard on the stump, "I'm going to be the education candidate"? You know, we always watch our first ladies come out, and, you know, when they get into the White House, every one of them will have an educational program and an advancement. You know, No Child Left Behind, Barack Obama with Race to the Top. They all have all of this wonderful, but our children are being dumbed down and indoctrinated. So we know we're spending more money than we've ever spent in the history of our nation on education, and it continues to fail. Why in the world would we allow the same people, these same politicians, to design any aspect of public education? You know, I read to the Calcasieu Parish School Board the three things that our founding fathers, because our founding fathers were very adamant and 100% to a man in agreement that there must be public education. Now, they didn't agree 100% on almost anything to do with the writing and the preparation of our Constitution. But they did agree that, okay, if we're going to do this, we will have to have public education. And then they had a committee and a chair, Mr. Benjamin Franklin, pretty smart guy, and Mr. Jefferson assisted. But they laid out what public education must be in America. And I asked the Calcasieu School Board members, do you know what the three principles that they said must be taught in every public school? And I got a bunch of blank stares, and that was the end of it. And I made sure I made eye contact all the way around the room, and then I read to them Mr. Franklin's words. First, we must teach our children religion. Second, we must instill and teach morality. And third, we will teach the sciences, in that order, by specifics and by design, because no free republic can survive without those three principles of public education. And ask yourself today, for all the dollars that we've thrown at public education, for all the design mechanisms of these standards and everything that they're bringing into our classroom, are we, as a nation, fulfilling the design of the founders? And we're not. We are failing miserably. When we look at violent crime and we look at some of the deplorable criminal actions of citizens, and it's because we've lost morality, you know, and we have, as a nation, that we still have moral people, and we're always the ones that are shocked when something deplorable happens. Well, where did that person that creates these deplorable acts, where were they educated? In American public schools, most often. So, you know, when we removed, took God and religion out of our classrooms, and then we removed accountability. You know, when you look at these politicians, and man, what a great example this executive office, this White House, and every president, I guess since Richard Nixon, has always had some type of scandal. You know, and we look at this president, it's no different. You know, the deplorable actions and what took place to roll over and go to sleep in Benghazi when four Americans were being murdered by Muslim extremists, and we all know that's what they are, but yet he would not proclaim that. When we see all of those actions, you know, and we're outraged, and then we don't demand accountability. Who has suffered, you know, who has lost their job behind Benghazi? You know, David Petraeus didn't lose his job behind Benghazi. He lost it because he was a philanthropist. But when we have lost accountability in our classrooms. Can a child, there is no corporal punishment in America. You can't spank a child's behind if he does wrong. Man, did the lawsuits. But So if we don't have accountability in any aspect of our public life, you know, we're sending children to public school and there is no accountability, you know, well, he just didn't understand the requirements. Let's let him have another opportunity. A child can go in this parish and lay his head on his desk, and if he chooses, sleep the entire hour. Is that education?
But, John, they're going to start fixing that. That's supposed to start getting fixed with Common Core. And
one of the things is personal responsibility.
Personal responsibility.
Because they're saying that they're holding our schools accountable, and that's not really what they're doing. Personal responsibility and responsibility for one's own actions and consequences of one's own actions. Our children, you know, if they're not allowed to fail, then they're not going to want to even try to succeed. So I think that is one of the things. And that's part of the problem with standardizing everything and making everything the same, so that no one does any better, no one does any worse, you kind of lose motivation to succeed.
And California's math standards, which were written with the great assistance of Dr. Sandra Strotsky, the ones for Common Core, they have a statement in there that it was it just jumped and smacked me in the face right off the page. No child taught at another child's expense. Really? Really? That's supposed to be the stellar standards in the country. I mean,
that's
a
socialist mechanism, though. You know, I mean, and when we look at and see, we have the history of this experiment that they're running on us right now. The history says that no socialist or communist government has ever succeeded. They will always fail. The collective cannot be the end-all, know-all. That's why people are jumping from buildings and chatting. That's why the Soviet Union fell apart. You know,
can
it's
we
so
use
corrupt.
The word that they like? It's unsustainable, John.
Well, I'm not into
sustainability. Let's take a word back. Can we? Can we take just one back? It's unsustainable.
Yeah, exactly. And it will fail.
Well, can
and
I tell
and
you
the only thing is that and that's why we do this, and that's why we have to be a mechanism of truth to every citizen in the state of Louisiana and across this nation. We must share the truth. When we find and know the truth, and so many American workers, I mean, they're real keen folks. I mean, they have created everything in this nation, you know, that made us great, and that keeps us as great as we are, as on the back of the American workers. And when you look at these people and you see that they're all hurting and you have conversation with them and ask them, why do you think this is taking place? Well, they took our jobs. They traded our jobs away. Well, okay, you know that aspect of it. And they got that. Huh? Well, what about our politicians? My vote doesn't count. They don't hear my vote. It's all rigged. We already know who's going to be elected before the election, and they don't even go to look at the voter turnouts.
Right.
The American workers are people that are just about given up, and that's our mission.
I have one little thing people can do to fight back.
Okay.
Just one little thing. It gets to Bruno's question about the bike paths in New Orleans. Karen and I have been wanting to do this for a long time, so thank you so much for finally giving us the opportunity. Karen used to laugh at me because every time, early on, that we would be traveling around the Superdome, and I saw the big billboard that said, "Make room for the bikes, it's the law," I would go ballistic because I'd already seen the plan from the 70s for, what they were going to do with the bike paths. And so it just would make me livid because I knew it was coming and I just couldn't do anything about it. But now we can do a little something about it because many people may have noticed that every now and then on WRNO, Entergy will come on and they'll have a ride your bike to work day. And they tell you all the wonderful reasons for doing that. You get camaraderie, you feel the fresh air, you get your exercise, and they give you all these, you save your gas, you're not polluting, they give you all these great reasons. And then they take the same pictures of the same 15 people who did it, and they tell you how fabulous it was, the turnout, and it was just spectacular. And so we decided a while back that if we ever got the opportunity, we were going to start drive your car to work Wednesdays. So every Wednesday, if you carpool, don't. Everybody drive your car to work. If you take a bus, just in, a lot of times, just don't. On Wednesday, just take your car. You can help the oil and gas industry. You're going to help keep our people working. Mm-hmm. You're going to not stink when you get to work and need a shower.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
avoid the bad weather. You won't be passing out.
You
and
need to listen to your radio.
Yeah, and have conversation. And you get to sit in the comfort of, you know, your vehicle. And depending on your vehicle.
American-made vehicle, which I don't know if we have too many.
Right. But, and, you know, if you, depending on what kind of wheels you have, you get to look really cool. And then we're going to take pictures from the traffic ladies on the news. And we're going to run that video to show how successful our event was.
Excellent.
I'm betting you we're going to have tens of thousands of vehicles on the road that we're going to be able to show. And we just thought that that's, you know, we need to start pointing out
that's
the ridiculousness. Yes, we need to start thinking logically. We need to start pointing out the obvious and the ridiculous. Another thing we came up with, because I am so technologically illiterate, that I really have great difficulty every time we park if we have one of those boxes that you stick your card in and out of or your ticket in and out of. And you pay, and then you go back up to the car, that kind of thing. And I just can't ever get it to work. And so I said, Karen, what are we going to do? She said, she was just standing there. She said, I'm waiting for the government to come help me.
There you go.
So we thought we'd just make a video, which we'll probably never get around to doing because we actually work, you know, to put food in our mouths. But we thought, wouldn't it be funny to have a video made where people are standing on the street corner and just never, ever cross because there's not a light.
Well, you know,
I
saw years ago, you know, that and because I am a child of the 60s, and I remember the great impact of boycotts, and I thought years ago that that would be a great deal for every American citizen just to take a day off, just shut it all down. And say,
well,
Karen has
a really good idea that's on the serious note. Parents need to keep the kids home on test day.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it would be test week.
From school day.
Yeah, they drag it on for a week.
Refuse to take the test. Just refuse. What are they going to do?
And as far as the NAEP goes, you can refuse to have your child take that test. Many people don't know. It's given in random samples, so not every kid's going to get it every year. But if your child, if you find out your child is scheduled for the NAEP, you do have the right to refuse to have your child take that test, and everybody should do that.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad idea. And that's what, you know, that was the same thing with smart meters, you know. And if folks want to have them, that's fine. But, you know, we have to have the right to opt out. And that's the thing, you know, that is the American way. I have a choice. You know, I have a freedom. You know, I'm not going to accept what everybody else that wants to get in line. If that's their right, their freedom, too. Let them do that. But I'm going to be contrarian when it comes to government implementation of anything in my life.
We told the Entergy guy at a meeting, you know, if smart meters are so fabulous, why didn't you just, your company just pay for it themselves and stick it out on the market, market it yourselves and not make us pay for all of it? And then if it's so fabulous, we probably would be beating down your door to pay for it and we'd be willing to pay any amount for it. But it's just not
that
fabulous, is it?
No, and it's not, and it's deplorable. And the American people have woke up to that, a handful of us, and that's the thing. And that's the mission, keep uniting and stand always as an American. Don't allow yourself to be hyphenated. Just be an American and start to take action. That's the one thing, the simplest action as an American has value, and it will restore value, especially when we let our children see it.
And we have to allow people to have a different opinion, John.
Sure. We're not allowed to
have a different opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and they really work hard on that, but they can forget it. That's not going to work with old John. But you know, we as Americans are the greatest people on this planet. We've already proven that, and if they'll get out of our way, we can restore it, and we can do that again. And that's what this movement and that's what the establishment of freedom. Our founding fathers were brilliant men. You know, they gave us a guiding light. And if we just stick to the very simple little small book, the Constitution, and we force these politicians to give us our freedoms and our liberties that are listed in the Bill of Rights, then we can take this back, and we will. Ladies, our 2 hours is up, and I want to thank both of you. It's been a pleasure. Could you give our listeners your website information so that people can go and visit you?
Sure. Go ahead, Karen.
www.thepeoplellc.com. We also have a Facebook page, The People LLC.
We're on Twitter.
We ask everyone to please like us on Facebook. That way you can keep up with our updates. We try and update daily on, you know, different bills that are and votes that are happening at our state legislature.
We're also on Twitter at The People LLC, and we have a YouTube channel also.
Right.
All right, ladies, thank you much for that.
We're not really comfortable about saying that, but we do accept donations. It does help in our fight. So.
All right. Folks, this is American Freedom Watch Radio, and we look forward to visiting with you and being live with you again next Tuesday. And once again, thank you, Angela and Karen.
Thank you, John.
Thank you very much.
Well, bye-bye.
Hello?
Yep, we have just routed up the
Hello?
Show, and for anyone... I think there might be someone still out there. We're just about finished. We've only got a couple minutes left on the air. And thank you all for tuning in. And as always, may God bless and protect the USA. And, tune in to tomorrow, Truth About Education. And Thursday is Transportation Americans United to Save the Freeway. Again, thank you, and may God bless and protect the USA. Good night, everyone.